Northeast Florida voters will soon decide on this area's first open congressional seat in 16 years. And former Sheriff John Rutherford is one of the candidates looking for your vote in the 4th District GOP primary. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and the NPR One app and watch the show now, too, video on demand with our partner, TVJax.com. Just ahead, John Rutherford on his campaign for Congress. You can get on the line now with your questions at 549-2937. Then later, we've got a closer look at solar power here in the Sunshine State as we examine Amendment 4. That's something else on the ballot this August. Plus, big honors for UF Health Jacksonville. We'll tell you about it, all of that ahead. But first this hour, former Duval County Sheriff John Rutherford is leading in the polls right now in a crowded field of candidates seeking to replace retiring Jacksonville Congressman Andrew Crenshaw. Now, the Congressional District 4 race on the GOP side thus far has been a race to the right, especially because another candidate on the ballot, Hans Tansler, has been attacking Rutherford for the former sheriff's opposition to the death penalty and other issues. With early voting underway right now, we are beginning the hour this morning with a closer look at the CD4 race. Lake Ray has already been on the program, as has Democrat David Bruderle. Hans Tansler will join us tomorrow. And today, John Rutherford steps into Studio 5 with more about his campaign for Congress. Former Sheriff Rutherford, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Good to be with you again.
Good to be with you. And if you're just tuning in, here's our question to callers. Who will get your vote in the race for the Congressional District 4 seat here in North Florida? John Rutherford, one of seven candidates on the ballot on the Republican side. We want your calls and questions right now. Get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet us, or you can weigh in on our Facebook page. And as I said, it's a crowded field, but you are leading in the polls right now, going into the August 30th primary, clearly the front runner. What made you decide to jump into this race?
Well, you know, Melissa, as we spoke earlier, law enforcement was truly a calling for me. It was a ministry. And I knew exactly what the Lord wanted me to do every day that I woke up for almost 40 years. And that was a tremendous blessing. And after I left office, you know, during my time as sheriff, as you know, I was legislative chair for the Florida Sheriffs for 9 years. And I really enjoyed that process in Tallahassee, building relationships, building coalitions, and really getting things done to help fight crime through the legislative process. After I retired, I was, wondering, okay, Lord, what's the next door, you're going to open for me? And suddenly this door opened. And I'm now trying to walk through that, what I believe is another calling in my life.
How would you see your priorities if you were to replace Andrew Crenshaw for this district? What do you see as the most pressing needs for Jacksonville and this area? And how would you translate your skill set as a former law enforcement leader into the political world?
Yeah. See, Melissa, that's a complicated question for this reason. There is no first, I think. Look, obviously, they've weakened our military. We have a weakened national security. But to fix the things that need to be fixed, we first have to fix the economy. So the number one issue that I would focus on is fixing that economy and then strengthening our military, providing those services that we promised our veterans, and also strengthening our borders. I think those are the top issues that have to be fixed after we address the budget issues.
And it's 549-2937. What are your questions for former Duval County Sheriff John Rutherford? He is running for Congress. His name is one of many that will be on the ballot. Early voting's underway now. The primary election is August 30th. Give us a call, 549-2937. And you mentioned priorities that are certainly in the mainstream on the Republican side of the ledger. Let me ask you about some of the comments that your most vocal opponent in this race, Hans Tansler, has been making. He has repeatedly called you too liberal for the district, in particular because of your stance on the death penalty. Let's listen to a little bit of his attack ad.
There's a clear choice for Congress. Liberal John Rutherford grew government spending, fought for higher taxes, and opposed the NRA. Rutherford also made Jacksonville a sanctuary city for illegal immigrants. Conservative Hans Tansler is a businessman. He cut state government spending and wants to cut federal agencies like the IRS by 50%. And Hans Tansler is A-rated by the NRA. Conservatives choose Hans Tansler.
I'm Hans Tansler, and I approve this message.
Okay. Your response?
Well, I have a very long and history of staunch Republican conservative leadership in the sheriff's office. The issue on the NRA, let me address that first. First of all, Hans Tansler does not have an A rating. He has an AQ rating, which is exactly the same rating that the NRA has given me. We both have AQ ratings. The only A rating in this race is actually by Lake Ray. Reason for that is the only way the NRA will give you an A rating is if you have actually voted on a bill, an NRA bill. And obviously, neither Hans nor myself have been in the legislature to do that.
Have held those types of offices, yeah.
Right. So we both have AQ ratings from the NRA. He does not have an A rating, as he says in his ad. Talks about growing spending. Look, the city right now is trying to fix the one issue that caused most of over half the growth in my budget when I was sheriff, which is the unfunded liability issue. My pension costs went from $22 million when I became sheriff to $105 million when I left. And so that's where the growth in spending was at. Now, you mentioned the issue on the death penalty. You know, I evolved on that position. I was pro-death penalty at one time. But as I evolved on my position of, you know, all life is sacred, which I believe all life is sacred, look, I still believe in a moral war. I believe in self-defense. I have absolutely no problem with an officer using lethal force to capture an aggravated felony suspect. What I oppose and what I think is a degradation of the sanctity of life is when you take someone who's been locked up, they're no longer a threat to anyone, they're locked up, and you march them down a hall and take their life, I think that, that's a degradation of the sanctity of life. I think all life is sacred, from the womb to the prison cell. It's all sacred. It's either sacred or it's not. And when we start putting qualifiers on, well, this guy's guilty of something, the baby's innocent, that's a qualifier. I don't believe the sanctity of life can be qualified. And so mm-hmm. I'm consistent in my feelings and in my beliefs. Now, Hans tries to tell you that somehow weakens my ability to protect the country. Well, it's exactly the opposite, Melissa. Look, that belief in the sanctity of life is what's driven me for the last 41 years to be willing to lay down my life to protect a life, to protect Hans's life. So that's where my drive comes from, is that belief in the sanctity of life, and to belittle that and think that somehow makes me a weaker person, I think is shameful.
And we're going to go to your calls in just a moment. For former Sheriff John Rutherford, as he campaigns for the open CD4 seat in Congress in this area, it's 549-2937 to join us. Let me ask you on another note. Mayor Letty Curry has been criticized in some quarters for emceeing the recent rally Donald Trump held at Veterans Memorial Arena. You were one of the local former officials and current officials that was at that rally. What would you say to those in this congressional district who were uncomfortable with people in this area standing up for Trump when more than 100 Republican office holders have signed an open letter to the Republican National Committee asking that funds be diverted away from his campaign because they see him as a uniquely divisive and polarizing figure?
Look, Donald Trump was not my first pick, but he is the nominee. And I think the party needs to get behind the nominee because the alternatives are horrible. Two words that drive me to support Donald Trump. And that is Supreme Court. Folks, I'm telling you, this race for presidency is not just about the next 8 years or 4 years. it's about the next 35 or 40 years. Because if there are somewhere between three and five, potentially, Supreme Court justices that are going to be replaced, and to have Hillary Clinton make those appointments just scares me to death. So I'm solidly behind Donald Trump. I don't apologize for that. I know he says some things poorly, but many times at the core of what he says, he's right. For example, he spoke about not bringing Muslims into this country. Well, I don't think we should bring anybody into this country that isn't vetted properly. You have to be able to vet people properly. Jim Comey has said we can't vet these people coming from Syria, from Iraq. And in fact, I think we should put a moratorium on bringing those people back to this country. What we should do is set up safe zones in country where we can help a lot more of them there than we can here. By bringing them into this country, we are certainly putting Americans' lives at risk, mm-hmm. just like the Obama administration just released 15 battlefield individuals who were captured on the battlefield and released them back into the world. Somehow, they got to understand that is putting American lives at risk.
Let me ask you, though, as a follow-up. It really is extraordinary to see two sitting members of Congress, as well as eight former members and nearly 30 former members of the RNC, sign their names to an open letter to Reince Priebus, the RNC chair. And I'm going to quote, "We believe that Donald Trump's divisiveness, recklessness, incompetence, and record-breaking unpopularity risk turning this election into a Democratic landslide, and only the immediate shift of all available RNC resources to vulnerable Senate and House races will prevent the GOP from drowning with a Trump-emblazoned anchor around its neck." Given that you are running for Congress and mm-hmm. you will be seeking these types of funds, what about this really, in the modern political era, I can never remember a state of affairs quite like that.
No, and I think what's happened, Melissa, and this is one reason I'm in this race, what's happened is the ideologues have taken over in Washington, D.C., and the bureaucrats Congress has delegated a lot of their legislative responsibility the bureaucrats through regulatory processes and through the continuing resolutions for appropriations. Look, the ideologues have taken over. And if you're not 100% my way, then it's the highway.
And by ideologues, do you mean progressive or conservative ideologues?
So both. I'm both sides, Melissa. Both sides. And that's why, look, I'm not an ideologue. I am not going to let perfect get in the way of good. And so I believe in a process that I call incrementalism. I'm going to take what I can get. I'm going to reach across the aisle. I'm going to build those coalitions, just like I did in Tallahassee for 9 years as a legislative chairman for the Florida Sheriffs. Representing all 67 sheriffs, we were able to get a lot of good things done for this community. And if I could, to go back just a moment to Mr. Tansler's ad, I forgot the sanctuary city issue. That is absolutely false. Jacksonville never has been a sanctuary city. It is not now a sanctuary city. And in fact, Melissa, you may remember, we celebrated our 287G program, where we actually took those criminal illegal aliens who had been arrested and brought into our jail. I had my correctional officers trained in immigration and customs enforcement law, and we actually began deportation proceedings on these illegals when they were arrested. So that's a far cry from being a sanctuary city. Far cry.
We're gonna keep talking about the issues in this campaign as we take your calls now. For John Rutherford, let's begin in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Larry. You've been on hold a while. Thanks for holding, Larry. You're on the air.
Yeah, Sheriff Rutherford, I think you did a good job as sheriff. Voted for you. But let me tell you, I disagree with almost everything you've said so far, but what troubles me the most about what you said mm-hmm. is I'm concerned about your thought processes. When you make a comment about a weakened military and you make a comment about a weakened economy, when the stock market is tripled, we have under 5% unemployment, and with the biggest and the greatest economy on the earth, what in the world are you thinking of?
You don't think that's weakened?
I'd like to know. Do I think what?
You don't think that's weakened?
What's weakened? The military?
Yes, our military.
Ask other countries if it's weakened. I know that you plan to your supporters, and I understand that. But, man, making a comment like that is just, I mean, the economy is weakened. We're the biggest economy on the planet, and for the last 8 years, the stock market was 6,000. Now it's 18. Unemployment was 11%. Now it's under 5.
And GDP, and GDP is limping along now at less than 1%. It had been limping along at about 2%.
How about the rest of the world, Sheriff?
Let's keep it civil, Larry. I appreciate the call. Okay, but what about his comment? Because it's a nuanced picture when you look at the economy. Unemployment's down to 5%. We're no longer in a recession. And when it comes to the military, what about that comment? How do you see the military is weakened?
Well, first of all, the Navy's the smallest it's been since World War II. You just saw where our Air Force says there's 600 or 700 pilots short. Those kind of things where we're weakened. We have whole air wings that are flying half of their planes because they can't. They're having to cannibalize the others to keep them flying. These issues were just talked about on the Hill with congressional committees.
As congressman, would you then lobby for more funds, for more, Tansler has criticized you advocating a return to earmarks. Would you advocate more earmarks for this congressional district for, say, NAS JAGS?
Look, what I advocate for is actually putting Congress back in the appropriations process. Right now, they pass a bill and the bureaucrats get to decide where all that money is going to be spent. And they did that because, look, there's a doctrine of non-delegation that says that one branch of government cannot delegate to another branch of government their legislative and constitutional responsibility. But they've done that by allowing the executive branch to create all this regulatory process. That's why I support the REINS Act, REINS. The REINS Act will pull all of that regulatory process back into Congress where it belongs, make Congress vote on these issues. They've done that because they don't want to put their name on a bill to stop or pass these regulatory changes. Same thing with the appropriations. We have to bring accountability back to our individual congresspeople for where appropriations are being spent.
Let's take a few more calls. Daryl is in St. Augustine. Daryl, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Yeah, the military thing, I'm glad you're more rational than your opponent, I think. However, our military is bigger than the next 13 countries combined, so I don't think we could name 13 countries. I think that includes Australia. I don't worry about them attacking us. So I don't think the military is that big. But my question is, legalization of marijuana, yes or no?
No.
And, Daryl, are you talking about the medical marijuana amendment or recreational?
Marijuana. Okay, so now my next question is, and I've asked this several times, Melissa, how much revenue does the Justice Department in this district here generate from the arrest of people because of marijuana? The crime pays the Justice Department when they arrest people for marijuana. And we pay to have them incarcerated. That doesn't make an economic sense. And if we're talking about economics and jobs, putting people in jail is not a economically smart thing to do marijuana.
So you're for legalization. And Daryl, thanks for the call. What about the amendment on the ballot? This isn't something you would deal with since it's a ballot amendment in Florida, but what about the amendment to legalize it for medicinal purposes?
Yes, I supported last year the idea that we have medical marijuana. Now, we oppose Proposition 2. The devil's in the details. We the sheriffs, the Florida sheriffs, supported legalized marijuana for medicinal purposes when it was necessary. Not for, I have tennis elbow and I want to smoke some marijuana. It was a very restrictive bill. What they tried to pass through that proposition would have been simply recreational marijuana.
Well, so then it sounds as though you're saying you would be against the ballot amendment that's coming back around again this fall. It needs 60% approval to pass to legalize THC in the state for medical use.
If it's the same language that was in the last proposition, yes.
Okay.
Because I know what that language was. I'm not sure what it is
All right, this time. Let's go to Desi on the south side. Hi, Desi. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
All right, go ahead.
Good morning. I have a few things I want to address. He just supported Donald Trump, and everybody knows, even some of the Republicans realize that Donald Trump is starting chaos between the races. The bottom line is this. Why would he support someone like that? And not to, and also the fact that he, when he was in the service of Florida, there were more people killed. There was like take no prisoners. There was more people killed, more citizens that were killed. Maybe they were doing the wrong thing. But his regime, during his regime, it was more authoritarian type behavior. And it sounds like him going, talking about the United States military, he wanted to support and support the borders and all of that. Well, what about Mexico? Mexico, what about their borders? There shouldn't be any borders in Mexico. These people are indigenous to America.
Okay.
They're Americans just like everybody else, and they should have the right. They need to go over there and clean up Mexico and remove the borders from Mexico. They have more right here than here.
Okay. Let's there's a lot in that call. But let me ask you as well, because she expressed frustration over the Donald Trump point. Here is a comment on our Facebook page for you, John Rutherford. I am astonished that John Rutherford just called for Muslim internment camps in the U.S. just because he's afraid to speak against Trump.
I did not say that.
I wanted to give you a chance to respond to that.
What I said was, for the refugee issue, we should not be bringing refugees to America that we cannot vet. We can better serve them by setting up safe zones in their own country, in Syria, in Iraq, and serve them there. Most of the refugees do not want to come to America anyway. They want to be able to return to their country, their cities, once this civil war is over.
How would we do that, though? How would we set up safe zones in these areas that are so unstable?
The military has already said that it's very easy for them to set up those safe zones.
But, we're seeing this unprecedented picture of this flood of refugees getting in dinghies in the Mediterranean and fleeing for their lives, that there is nowhere safe for them to go. And what about—
No, that's why I say the military sets up those safe zones. There's plenty of open and safe country that they can place them in. It's just a matter of making that a priority and something that you want to do, as opposed to, suggesting that no one should have sovereign borders. Ask Angela Merkel in Germany how taking 1 million of these refugees in has helped Germany. You see what's going on in Germany and France. We see what's beginning to happen here in America.
And clearly this issue of borders has certainly struck a very strong chord in this election cycle.
Right.
And concern about terrorism.
I am for strong borders. Now, I'm also for good legal immigration. We need immigration.
And so how would you approach the issue of comprehensive immigration reform?
First of all, we have to make sure that anybody that's coming to this country is properly vetted. That has to happen. If we can't properly vet them, then they don't come. If we don't know who they are and why they want to be here, they don't come.
What would you
they
say,
have
though?
They have no right to immigrate here.
Agencies like World Relief, who point out that the vetting process for refugees is exhaustive and takes years. And they've pushed back against criticism that your opponent, Leigh Gray, has also made, that the process isn't thorough enough. And they've appeared on this program and taken us chapter and verse through the exhaustive, years-long vetting process.
Well, let me tell you. Where I put my faith is in Jim Comey, the FBI director, who tells me that they can't vet these people, not agencies that are making money off of bringing these immigrants to this country. There's four agencies in Northeast Florida, and I'm told that these refugees are coming to Northeast Florida, yet not a single law enforcement officer at the local, state, or federal level knows where they're going or who they are. Folks, this is dangerous. We have to put a moratorium on bringing these unvetted refugees into our country.
We're
going to wind up like France and Germany if we don't.
I'm going to take a few more calls. It's Tom on the West Side. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes, good morning. Well, first, let me say that I think that the idea of these safe zones in foreign countries is fiscally irresponsible and absolutely impractical. If the military could do this so easily, then why didn't we do it in Iraq or Afghanistan, where we're still failing in that assignment? And the point I originally wanted to make is I want to know what Rutherford feels qualifies him based on his record, in which the city became a murder capital where gangs took off, and he suppressed the media by taking away their access to the radios to know what JSO was doing.
John Rutherford.
Okay. First of all, safe zones have been created in countries of civil unrest for many years. It's absolutely doable. It's fiscally responsible, and I think it's humanly responsible. Second issue, what was it about, Melissa?
Well, he had a few points. Safe zones, your record as sheriff with the crime rate and the murder rate.
Oh, yes, yes.
And also, and it must be said, it's not an overriding campaign issue, but it certainly was a sore point for local media outlets when you took police scanners out of newsrooms and made it harder for them to basically do their jobs, to cover events.
We put every call up on a TPP site where everybody could see every call that was being worked in the city. The only thing that we did was stop the media from being able to get to calls before we did by taking that down. And I protected the rights, the privacy rights of my citizens who are my constituents. I protected their privacy rights by not having their HIPAA information and other information passed across the airwaves where the media could hear it, and including our strategic planning. Now, let me address the murder issue. You may not know because the media was lax in telling the story, but in 2011, after Mayor Payton gave me additional officers, after we got Angela Cori in as state attorney, by 2011, we had the lowest violent crime numbers and the lowest murder numbers, raw numbers, not per capita, the lowest numbers this city had seen in 40 years, going all the way back. We had fewer murders in 2011 than we had in 1971. So that's the record that I'm running on, the fact that I had the lowest crime numbers this city's seen in 40 years.
And when you make the case to the voters, you've been going around doing lots of events and interviews. The primary is August 30th. Early voting is underway now.
Correct.
And what are your closing arguments as you seek this seat in Congress?
Yeah, well look, I would say I am a staunch conservative, contrary to everything that Hans Tansler is saying about my positions. In addition to that, I'm the only one in this race that has worked on national security issues at the local, state, and federal level. And I've run as CEO. I've been CEO of a very large organization, $498 million budget, 3,200 employees, 1,600 of them carrying guns. I've done all that. But let me tell you why I'm in this race. I'm in this race because less than 4 hours from where we sit, Melissa, 50 of our fellow citizens were murdered by a failed immigration policy and a failed national intelligence policy. And then, shortly after that, we have 5 dead Dallas, Texas police officers who were murdered, and they were murdered by the culture of death and violence that I've been talking about as sheriff for the last 12 years. And that is beginning to take deep root in this country. In addition to that, for 2 decades, I have fought against the violence and drugs that's pouring across a southern border that is no longer sovereign. And I've seen the death and destruction that has brought to our communities and to our families. And I'll tell you, I've fought hard here in Jacksonville for this city's public safety. I fought hard for the hometown. I want to go to D.C. and fight hard for the homeland.
Well, we thank you for joining us, and thanks for a very spirited discussion and some very pointed questions from listeners. We appreciate the open exchange. John Rutherford, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
We will be joined by another candidate in this race tomorrow, Hans Tansler III. Meanwhile, you can look at candidate profiles and more about these races at our website, wjctnews.org. Meanwhile, much more still ahead later. It's a big honor for UF Health. But up next, a look at solar power in Florida as the voters consider Amendment 4. We'll tell you about that next.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, many psychiatrists have offered armchair assessments of Donald Trump's mental health. The history of diagnosing mental fitness for a high office when personality disorders can be strengths, and the pitfalls of long-distance psychological analysis. At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJZT, your community, your world.
Hi. I'm Steve Woodard, the Director of Emergency Preparedness for the City of Jacksonville. Knowing your evacuation zone is critical to your safety. Listen to emergency management for important evacuation information. Stay informed at jacksready.com and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions.
Every week, composer Bruce Adolph joins us for a musical game, our piano puzzler. Bruce rewrites a familiar tune in the style of a great composer. We get one of our listeners on the phone who tries to guess the hidden tune and the composer whose style Bruce is imitating. Play along with the PT Piano Puzzler on the next Performance Today from APM. Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, Florida is known, of course, as the Sunshine State, but the use of solar energy here is still sporadic and hotly debated. Backers of Amendment 4 say their proposal is one way to advance solar power in Florida. Now, this constitutional amendment is on the ballot in the upcoming primary election on August 30th. What it basically does is reduce the cost of installing solar panels at your home or business. With more about that, we welcome Steve Smith, Executive Director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. He's on the line with more about Amendment 4 in today's Going Green. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Now, the biggest barrier to solar panels for most folks is the upfront cost. It's expensive to put them on your roof of your house or your business. It's my understanding Amendment 4 would provide a tax exemption to make it a little less expensive. How would it work?
Well, it would work in two ways. There's two elements of Amendment 4 that abate taxes. The first is the commercial property tax is abated. So if you are a small business owner, you have a restaurant, a hardware store, or you're a big box store like Walmart or Home Depot, and you want to put solar on the roof of your building, and let's say you put a $25,000 or $30,000 solar system on that roof, this will prevent the property tax from going up on the value of your real estate or the actual building itself. So that would remove what may be a little bit of a disincentive for someone who wants to put these panels on and ultimately save money by reducing their energy bill. The other component is dealing with what's called tangible personal property tax. And that's largely a tax on equipment. And so if a company wants to lease you solar panels, they will continue to own them, and they would have to pay that tangible personal property tax. And while it's legal in Florida to lease solar equipment to people, it has been a less used option. And so think about it. The upfront cost is exactly like you said. If you're going to go buy a car, you might pay cash for it, you might get a loan for it, or you might lease it. The same is with solar. We want to make sure we have all those options. So Amendment 4 allows all those options by making sure that the tangible personal property tax doesn't limit the leasing option, and that will help residential homeowners have more options for how they can put solar on their house without any upfront cost.
Now, this amendment reached the ballot by way of a unanimous vote in the state legislature, so there's clearly bipartisan support for this. How do you make the argument in particular to Florida voters, Steve? We are known as the Sunshine State, but we are way behind when it comes to widespread use of solar. We use 40% more electricity than the national average here in Florida, since most of us are running our air conditioners the majority of the year. How do you see passage of Amendment 4 bringing down those energy costs and moving Florida into a more sustainable future?
Well, it is one of the key policy options that we need to have in place to encourage the rapid spread and development of solar power. And solar is good for people because it helps lower their overall energy costs. It helps protect them against any future price increases. And it ultimately is good for the environment, where it decreases our use of dirtier fuels, whether it be coal or natural gas or others that cause pollution. So this is good for the state all the way across the board. And Amendment 4 is part of a suite of options. We already have in Florida an important policy for people who want to put solar on their rooftop called net metering, and that needs to be in place. And this tax abatement would be the other piece of the puzzle that we think would really help. There are other things that we could do in the state, but the appetite for the legislature was one of tax relief, and we supported that. They passed it unanimously. And Amendment 4 has unprecedented support across the state, across the political spectrum. We have the usual suspects, the folks like us in the environmental community, progressives. We have conservatives, the libertarians, Tea Party activists. We've got the Christian Coalition. And then we've got lots of businesses and solar businesses that are involved in this. So this is very popular. It's very important. And it's one of those important things that we can do in the state to really live up to our name as the Sunshine State.
Rick in Riverside. Hi, Rick. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. I thoroughly support the idea of the tax rebate. But my question is, why does something like this have to be an amendment to the constitutional ballot?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for that question. Steve Smith.
Very, very good question. In the state of Florida, the legislature in Tallahassee cannot, without putting something on the ballot and in the Constitution, abate a local tax. So because these property taxes are assessed at the county level, the Tallahassee cannot dictate that down to the county level without putting it before the voters. So it's not that we're trying to put more into the state constitution. This is the actual mechanism that the state constitution requires in order to abate a local tax.
Let me ask you as well, there's another solar amendment voters will consider in November, Amendment 1. And critics of this amendment say that it would lock in place Florida's less than stellar solar power policy, that it would keep providing a very generous playing field for utilities and prevent them from leasing solar panels to homes and businesses and selling the excess energy on the grid. supporters of Amendment 1 are calling it smart solar. So there are two amendments on the ballot, one this summer, one this fall, and in the eyes of the average voter, they could easily be confused or misunderstood. What about that?
Well, Melissa, thanks. And that is such a critical and important issue to help clarify for voters. Amendment 4, which is on the ballot in August, is good for solar, has the support of the solar industry, has this very broad bipartisan support across the board. What the big monopoly utilities are doing in November with Amendment 1 is really nothing more than a wolf in sheep's clothing. It is a disingenuous, deceptive movement by the big monopoly utilities to limit solar. What they're going to do is they're going to claim that this quote-unquote smart solar is going to allow people to own and lease solar equipment. Well, we already have that right in Florida. There's nothing new there. But then they have a very deceptive language that says that they don't want non-solar customers subsidizing solar customers. Well, that all sounds good, but it's just simply not true. And what they're going to do is, if that passes, they're going to use it as a justification to roll back net metering and to add punitive charges to customers who put solar on their roof. Now, think about it. If you're a big utility, you're in the business of selling electrons or selling electricity to people. If people start generating power themselves by putting solar on the roof, you don't get as much sales. And so they are doing this very deceptive, slick. They've got $18 million. They raised $2 million from just the utilities themselves the other day. This is utility-backed. It's got big money, but it is not good for solar. And the way you know for sure is there is no solar company in the state of Florida or in the United States of America that is supporting Amendment 1, because it is deceptive and it is a disingenuous move by the big utilities to limit solar while they're pretending. The Supreme Court should have stopped it. It was a very controversial 4-3 decision that it got through. But it is on the ballot in November, and it is N-O, in November. Remember, the first two letters of November are N-O. Remember, no on one in November is critically important.
All right. In the meantime, Amendment 4 is on the ballot in August, and it is our Going Green for today. Steve Smith, Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. And listen, have people go to yeson4.org if they want more information. And thanks for the opportunity to share this information with you today.
And we'll be back in a moment.
This Going Green segment is brought to you by the Unitarian Universalist Church of Jacksonville.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with J.D. Vance, author of the new bestseller, Hillbilly Elegy, a memoir of a family and culture in crisis. He grew up in a Rust Belt town in Ohio, in a family from the hills of eastern Kentucky. He writes about the social isolation, poverty, drug use, as well as religious and political changes in his family and in Greater Appalachia. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
WJCT and Community First Credit Union are pleased to announce that Pedro Noguera, national expert on public education in America, is this year's morning keynote speaker at Teach, Saturday, October 8th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. For more information, visit wjct.org/teach.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, it's the first week back to school for a lot of your kids out there. Let us know how back to school is going on Instagram. Every Friday, we're going to publish our favorite Instagram photo of the week if you use the hashtag ILoveWJCT. We want to see your back to school pictures right now on Instagram. We'll pick our favorite and put it on our first read newsletter this Friday. Subscribe to it at WJCTnews.org. And finally, this hour, it's a big honor for UF Health Jacksonville. The hospital has been awarded the top recognition that exists for heart disease care, and they are the only hospital in Florida to receive accreditation from the Society of Cardiovascular Patient Care. UF Health now a designated chest pain center with primary PCI and resuscitation. With more on what all this means, we're pleased to welcome Dr. Joseph Sabato with the UF Health Department of Emergency Medicine. And good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
And congratulations. This is an extremely rigorous process, two-year-long process, one of the toughest in the healthcare system. So first off, congratulations to UF Health.
Oh, thank you. It's been a lot of work to get to this point.
And let's explain what this means when it comes to heart patient care on the First Coast, what this means for patients that come to you.
What it means is that in Northeast Florida, every day, three people will collapse with a cardiac arrest. Half of those people are having a heart attack as part of it, and half of them have some other issue that causes it. Unfortunately, only one in three of those people get CPR before anybody else, before EMS arrives. Mm-hmm. And it's those people that need CPR that give them any chance to survive. Then when rescue gets there and are able to do the things to help resuscitate someone, bring them to the hospital, there's really critical things that need to happen at the hospital to help that person survive after this event. It has to do with controlling the person's body temperature, has to do with their the ability to take them to the cardiac catheterization lab for relief of blockages that can be life-saving, and the monitoring in order to make sure that those people get the right care and right management.
UF Health, the former Shands, I think has long been recognized for its Level 1 Trauma Center and its incredible response when someone is in a medical emergency leading stroke care program. Now, this recognition is the top center in the community for cardiac care. It's yet another feather in your cap, I guess.
Well, we've been doing these things for years.
Yeah.
And what happened was when we came up for our recertification as a chest pain center, I looked at the criterion for a resuscitation center and realized we're doing all these things. We should get credit for it. And so that was part of the process of moving forward with that.
And you said that it was really difficult to get that accreditation. What all went into it?
Well, it requires that you get people to agree on state-of-the-art protocols. And that involved five or six specialties, nursing, all of the support personnel, as well as then working with the EMS agencies with that. So it was a tremendous amount of work went into this in order to make sure everything was coordinated, that no step was missed. Because in many hospitals, unfortunately, if they don't follow those protocols, the chance for that person to survive is much less.
Heart attack's still the leading cause of death in the United States. 600,000 people each year die annually from heart disease. I did not know this. More than 5 million people visit a hospital every year with chest pain.
That's right.
That's incredible. So your goal, of course, is to reduce the mortality rate through education and reduce the time it takes for people to receive immediate treatment. That's something you're continually working on, I would assume. Yeah.
We've been working with EMS rescue throughout the region to be able to help them recognize that someone's having a heart attack so we can shorten the time from the time they have their chest pain to the time that blockage is relieved. That makes a difference in their survival and how their life is after hospitalization.
Anything else people need to know about UF Health? Because I think people, even years later after an organization changes its name, people still think of it as what it used to be called, and think of it in the way they used to think of it, rather than the way it is today. And UF Health not only is no longer called Shands, but in so many ways, there have been some really dynamic healthcare initiatives going on there in the recent years.
Well, forever we've been recognized as the trauma center for the area.
Right.
But we take care of the sickest of the sick medical patients. And this is just one example in trying to deal with these critical cardiac arrest, post-cardiac arrest patients and chest pain patients. But we do this on a daily basis for the community. And, you know, message I really want to pass on with things is everyone should learn to do CPR. That, if if people do CPR before EMS arrives, we can save over 100 lives every year in this region.
You can learn how on YouTube in about 2 minutes, too, right?
That's right.
It's pretty easy.
That's right.
Such important advice. Absolutely right. And again, congratulations to UF Health Jacksonville and to Dr. Joseph Sabato with UF Health's Department of Emergency Medicine. Such important work they do. Hopefully you never have to go there, but if you do, you'll be in good hands. Thanks, Doctor.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Fulcorum is running the board, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and the NPR One app. Next on Diane Rehm, many psychiatrists are offering armchair assessments of Donald Trump's mental health. The history of diagnosing mental fitness for high office. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. See you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.